You're listening to Stateside. I'm April Baer. The time that you spend separated from someone you love who has COVID-19 is counted slowly, hour by painful hour. If your family member is quarantined, possibly at risk of exposure, that time drags even more slowly. Last year, the Stateside team met a brother and sister, Duan and Tondelaya, were separated by prison walls. We thought of them as the outbreak picked up speed this spring. Duan Quinn is serving a sentence for unarmed carjacking at Lakeland Correctional Facility in Coldwater. That prison has reported hundreds of infections. His sister, Tondelaya Quinn, lives and works near Muskegon. We got him on the phone to see what they're doing. Duan, Tondelaya, welcome back to Stateside.
Thank you for having us.
Duan, I wanted to begin with a question to you. The Department of Corrections has, at this point, tested every prisoner in its facilities. Could you talk a little bit about what the mood was like before that testing was done and these questions were just out there about who might have the virus?
Well, I guess a lot of us, including myself, were in denial that we even, you know, had the virus because of, you know, being asymptomatic or not having, you know, severe signs of having it. But we were trying our best to not touch things, keep our mouths covered, you know, to be aware of who we were standing next to and all these things in the hope that, you know, we wouldn't get it and hope that things would prevent us from getting it. Unfortunately, I just think that the living quarters of us being, you know, really just cramped and on top of each other, we didn't have a chance. It doesn't matter how much we police or how much we try to prevent, to use those preventative measures. We just were, at the end of the day, we just was at the mercy of the virus. And like in my unit, somewhere around 70 out of 83 of us tested positive for the virus.
Wow. Would you say that the mood has changed with this new knowledge of who has it and where?
Well, we're in the state of waiting on to get the results of that the virus has passed through our system and we don't have it no longer, or we're no longer, I guess, carriers. So we took two tests 2 days apart, and we're waiting on the results from that. So no, the mood is still kind of like somber and in a state of, you know, a little bit of despair because we are still walking around here mourning the loss of souls, you know, and we have the fear of what the future may bring and also being, you know, afraid of a second round of the coronavirus.
Indeed. Tondelaya, besides Duan, you have another brother and a cousin also in state correctional facilities right now. What has it been like to be on the outside and not able to, you know, not feeling like you have the complete information about how they're doing?
I guess you'd say it's just sitting, waiting, hoping, you know, that your loved one is okay. There's not, like, the facility reaches out to you and tell you that, you know, your loved one is sick or ill or even that they're okay. You have to wait for the most part for your loved one to call you to tell you, hey, look, I'm okay or I'm not okay.
What are your biggest worries for all of them?
Just staying safe, being safe. Quarantine is the biggest. Duan is at his facility. I think it hit harder for him on his side of the state for whatever reason. My cousin and my other brother, the cases down there isn't as bad as it is for Duan. But my worries is just that, you know, they stay safe as possible and they continue to quarantine them.
Duan, are you comfortable sharing do you know how the results of your test came out?
No. Well, of course, I tested positive after the initial test, but then the following two tests, I don't have the results for neither one of those tests, and I want to say for the most part, everybody's waiting for those results. The National Guard came in, I would like to say, like maybe 2 weeks ago on a Tuesday and Thursday and tested us, but we don't have the results for those tests yet. So we have no idea, actually.
So having had the one test, is the facility putting you under quarantine just with the presumption that the first test might have been correct?
Oh, yes. Yeah. Immediately, pretty much, they went to moving the positive guys. I mean, it was a negative because it was so many, in my unit especially, it was so many people that was positive. They just let us sit here, and they moved out the few positives, and they moved them to a different location.
Right.
So So immediately they did go to trying to separate those who tested positive from those who did not.
Right. What has it been like?
The biggest, like I said, the biggest fear or the biggest problem was seeing, you know, people that you know going out on the ambulance. The ambulance was coming here at the beginning of the breakout 2, 3, 4 times a day. And they would, you know, they would stop everything, and you would see somebody on a stretcher going out, not knowing if you ever see them again, you know, and or somebody would be walking in the unit, and their equilibrium would be gone. You could just tell that they weren't the same. And then they'll go out, then they'll come back, they'll go out and come back, and then finally they'll go out, we wouldn't see them again. Some people did come back, but many people here did die.
Is there anything specific that you'd like to see changed about how the state is handling coronavirus right now? I mean, we've seen some changes in testing. What else is on your mind?
I think bleach should continue to be made available to the porters. Before the pandemic, this was not the case. At the first sign of another outbreak or an outbreak of this magnitude, I believe, like, the staff should be checked and screened for any signs of the virus. Officers should be scheduled to work in the same areas daily, so they won't work in one area one day and another area the next day and kind of transport the virus throughout the compound. I guess they got to get us more spacing. I mean, you have to find a way to protect the elderly population. I got a guy here, Mr. Harris. He tested positive with us. He's also battling cancer, and he survived. But at 79 years...
You have 1 minute remaining.
At 79 years old, you have to wonder, why is he still here with us in prison? Like, why he hasn't been tethered home or released to some type of a family member or some kind of care facility, something. But to see him struggling to move around and see it, the worry in his face, I can see it. I know the guy. You know, I mean, I see the worry in his face. Every day he wake up, you know, he's looking around and he needs that, you know, that human contact, that reinforcement. But I can see that he's terrified, you know. And I wonder, like, when is the governor going to take use of the millions and millions of dollars that she has set aside for tethers and start using them on people who has maybe aged out of their crime or did so much of their sentence? This warehousing of incarcerated citizens is adding to the death toll, and it has got to be brought to an end some kind of way. So I definitely would like to see them, you know, give us more space and look at rehabilitating the percentage of the population.
Thank you for using GTL.
And for our listeners just joining us, you may be aware that conversations with people who are in corrections facilities are limited by time. So we just lost Duan Quinn as we've been talking to him. Tandalaya, I'm sure this is not a new experience for you, and it may show people what it's like to be talking to someone you care about and then just have that conversation be cut off.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, this kind of communication when you're talking to somebody on the inside is probably not what most of us tend to think of as, you know, a normal conversation because of the restrictions on your time and because of the restrictions on what you want to say when you feel like you're maybe not alone with the person. Would you say that the current state of things with the pandemic has changed the kind of conversations that you've had with your brothers and your cousin?
For sure. I think you may have even got a feel of how rushed you feel having to hold a conversation with a loved one like that. So with the amount of time that we have and the questions or the concerns, you try to get those more important questions in so that your phone call isn't lost, just like it was, just like it just happened with us.
Yeah. Duan's got kids.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I wonder what it's like for them, you know, when they're, you know, it's hard enough for an adult who's, you know, kind of thinking it through. But if you're trying to have a conversation with your dad and dealing with all these mitigating factors.
Yeah. And even with that, it's really difficult. The Duan isn't able to really have a relationship with his kids the way he'd like to, of course, being that the mother of his children, she's in a relationship, and Duane has to have stipulations on times that he's able to call. And at this moment, he's not even able to call the his children's, the mother of his two kids' phone. So what we were doing were we were having the kids go over to my mother's house. But with the coronavirus, the pandemic going on, my mother is older. She's quarantined to her home, so she's not able to, she's not allowing anyone in her home at this time.
Right.
So it's been really difficult for Juan, for Duane to have contact with his children, even via telephone.
Tandalaya, outside of the members of the family who are dealing with this from the inside, how is your family doing? Has everyone been able to stay healthy?
Yeah, my family, fortunately, everyone's healthy. I do work at an assisted living facility, so it was really difficult for me to continue to do that sort of work because I am an essential worker. I do have a daughter that has severe asthma, so yeah, it was really difficult to even get up and go to work in the morning sometimes.
It's so funny to think about both you and Duane having a sort of common ground, both being in these high-risk situations.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. He worries about me and I worry about him.
Yeah. I'd like to ask you the same question I asked Duane. If there was anything you could change about how the state is responding to the crisis, what would you say?
I think the biggest thing would be vaccines. Hopefully, you know, they can come up with a vaccine that can kind of secure us with feeling that our loved ones are okay, possibly, and then quarantine, to continue to take quarantine seriously and to keep these inmates safe in there.
Yeah.
And not stacking them up on top of each other.
You know, it must be hard for you both seeing your brothers in this situation and understanding their need, and also seeing the situation in your workplace and the many, many elderly people who are at risk in Michigan's nursing homes right now. I mean, it feels like the politics of the situation are telling us we need to make choices about whose safety is the most important right now.
Yes.
But have you thought through that?
Oh, boy, I have. I know I had actually considered resigning, but I had to take care of my family. So it's difficult. You know, I see the residents at my facility, they're declining because they're not having that contact with their family members. They're all confined to their apartments that's almost as small as a cell. So it's difficult to sit back and see what it's doing to all of us, not just Duane, not just myself, but, you know, family members of the residents that's at my facility, the residents, staff. It's hard. It's really difficult to see what it's doing to all of us.
And now we've got Duane back on the line here. If you're just joining us, our guests are Duane Quinn, who is serving a sentence at Lakeland Correctional Facility, and his sister Tandalaya, who lives and works near Muskegon. Duane, we just got a bit of a taste of what you and Tandalaya and the other folks in your life experience every day in terms of what communicating is like. You're just trying to have the simplest of phone conversations.
Right.
How would you say given that, you know, this is a stressful time and maybe there are a lot of things you'd like to say to the people in your life, how are you getting through this period of just heightened fear and heightened attention with the coronavirus?
Well, I was just trying to calm them and calm their nerves and their stress and their fear by letting them know that, you know, I had a less severe form of the virus. I wasn't at any point in any danger of losing my life, and that they didn't have to worry to that magnitude that I may not, you know, be around, or that I may, you know, succumb to the virus. I was just really trying to calm their nerves and let them know that, you know, I was okay and that things would be fine. And thank God that they were. So So that was what I was trying to convey to them, because it was a new virus and people were dying ill, and that's the only thing that people were seeing. So I just wanted to let them know that, you know, in my situation, that I didn't have that form of the virus.
Dewan, are there ways in which you feel like the pandemic has exposed some issues that really need attention and corrections?
Yes. Well, a lot of us feel that this state in particular is just warehousing its incarcerated citizens. We have long and indeterminate sentences, and we have to do a minimum our time. So if you get 25 years, you have to serve 25 years before becoming parole eligible. But on the other hand, you have lifers who have been given life sentences, yet they are scheduled for parole review after serving 10 years. So we don't understand how it is that we have been given the lesser punishment to a degree, but yet we have to wait longer than someone who's been given the more severe punishment before we are reviewed. And that just gives us the impression that they're just holding us here regardless whether we show signs of rehabilitation or not. And I don't think I should have to, you know, file a lawsuit against the state and the governor just to become parole eligible after 10 years like lifers. For example, you know, I'm halfway through a 25-year sentence, yet I have yet to see the parole board. But someone who came down at the same time as me has already been parole reviewed. So you have situations where you have lifers who may be reviewed 4 to 15 times before someone like me doing a 25-year sentence. We just need fair and smart and just reform when it comes to parole eligibility and who becomes eligible for parole. I'm not in no way advocating against lifers. Everyone knows that the data shows that group of lifers, recidivism rate, is really low, less than 1% actually, and it's never usually for a violent crime. So these citizens, you know, after they've been 20, 30 years, they have really become, like, harmless. But yet this group, they are also sitting here exposed to death. So I don't think the state really has the data to show that they really need to be housing these inmates no longer than, you know, 30 years as well.
Dewan Quinn is an inmate at the Lakeland Correctional Facility in Coldwater, Michigan. We've also been speaking with his sister, Tondalaya Quinn, in Muskegon. Thanks both of you for joining us. We really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
Appreciate it. Thank you for having me.
We should note that Dewan has received results from a second round of testing at MDOC facilities. And at this point, he's testing negative for the coronavirus.